And now, Bill Resnick and Steve Bloom.
Hi, Denise. Thank you. Steve Bloom, welcome to KABU.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be here.
Steve Bloom writes poetry. He also writes on politics. He organizes poetry evenings in New York City for radicals. As to the poetry in our next membership break, Steve will lead off with one of his poems. He's making his first book of poems. It's called The Time I Stopped to Watch. He's making it available to KABU folks who renew or become members. As to his strategic political work, Steve, you recently been examining the sea change in U.S. political consciousness, the 99% of the 1%, the Bernie Sanders phenomena. Socialism's move from dirty word to real option. It can be discussed as an alternative to our current system. That's quite remarkable. Who would have ever thought that 10 or 15 years ago? Steve, tell us briefly about the sea change. Why is it happening? What are its roots?
Well, in some ways, you can't really tell why something like this happens. In retrospect, you know, there's climate change and the potential catastrophe, which is looming and that the corporate establishment is doing nothing about. The economy has been a disaster for working people for a long time. And at some point, people just decide they're fed up with it and they're going to do something. I remember during the anti-Vietnam War movement when, you know, it was the same thing. You wouldn't have imagined in 1965 that within 3 or 4 years there would be a million people in the streets. The changes happen, and sometimes we don't always know why. Why was it the Vietnam War that created that crisis? But whatever is happening, it's real. I think it's clear that it's real.
Part of it, just briefly to comment, of course, there were movements like the civil rights movement. No one would have imagined a black struggle in the 50s. And yet there were all of these antecedents, people struggling at the molecular level, building sort of groups and fighting ideas and creating newspapers and music that sort of anticipated it. I'm sure you agree with that.
Yeah, there are always small groups, even in the leanest of times. There are people who are engaged in struggle. And at some point, those small struggles just spark off a big response in society as a whole. We seem to be in that moment. We're getting into that moment. I would say we're in the early stages of the process.
Yeah, in fact, I think I'm going to claim some credit for KABU Radio and being one of those voices that are not dominant. We have a smaller audience than Fox News, I'm afraid, but there's all kinds of us all over the country, and the word gets out, particularly when people are receptive. Steve, let's talk about the manifestations of it fairly briefly so people give us a sense of what's happening now, the whole sort of spectrum of it.
Well, you know, it's hard to give the whole spectrum in a minute or two, but the big things are fairly obvious. Millions of people are embracing Bernie Sanders and his message, what he calls socialism. And whether we agree with that use of the term or not, it is quite amazing that millions of people are embracing it. The big climate march in New York last year was a clear manifestation, with virtually everyone carrying signs that identified capitalism as the problem. You're not necessarily going to have that unanimity in terms of projecting solutions, but people were all identifying capitalism as the problem. When the cops kill an unarmed black youth these days, you know, a few years ago, the response was a modest local protest. Now the protests are citywide, regional, even national. And big-time sports stars start putting on I Can't Breathe T-shirts. So these are the kinds of things that are happening, and I'm sure if we sat and thought about it, we could name all kinds of others. But that kind of captures the
right.
You know,
yeah, I'd actually like to name a few others, and then we can go into our station break. So have your poetry ready. You know, I was reading recently about a group of corporate advisors and business school professors who held a conference, and the name of the conference was Capitalism in Question, believe it or not. And some of the questions, listen to this: what kind of economic system would a better world be built upon? Would it be a capitalist economic system? If so, what kind of capitalism? Then, If not, what would it be? Now, these are business school professors. I suppose they're hearing from some of their students. There are actually radicals who go to business schools, you know, in order to learn some of the skills of maneuvering in capitalism. I think that's pretty amazing. You wouldn't have found that 10 or 15 years ago. And then there's all
one of the signs of a general shift in sentiment, the developing radicalization, is that even those in power begin to question their own assumptions about the world, and how to rule the world.
And some of them get very disturbed that the companies that they're advising don't listen to them in their furious drive for more profits. Steve, you're also a poet, and you write a lot in various places, mostly obscure, I'm afraid. I'm going to do a little station break now, and then we'll do your poetry, and then we will go to Pledge Central to talk to Linda and Bill, tell the audience about KABU. Steve, why don't you read a poem from your first book?
Okay.
And then
it's actually my second book, but it's okay. The poem is called April 10th, 2006, New York City. Sometimes politics proves to be as strange as poetry. Never thought that I would feel at home in a demonstration where one American flag follows another after another after another. But today, it's not the usual my country can beat up your country crowd. No, this time, it's the invisible people speaking out loud for a change. I am Haitian. I am Korean. I am Pakistani, they tell me. I am Dominican. I am Mexicana. I am Filipino. I am Ethiopian. I am Jamaican. I am Guatemalan. And I live here, too. I will not be less of a human being than you. I fly the flag of my country, and I fly the flag of my other country. For whether I am there or here, your nation would collapse without the work I do. So I stand, watching, ask myself whether we have, perhaps, just taken one small step towards today, when every human being will at last fly every flag of every nation and still feel at home.
Well, that was from Steve Bloom's second book, The Time I Stopped to Watch. Steve.
I'm still here.
You're still there. Good. You'll have to ask your publisher to print up more copies of the book. I hope it's really worth reading and fun.
I make them by hand myself. So however many you need, I have them promised.
You are a true revolutionary in the Karl Marx's great sense of.
I try to avoid the craziness of the publishing world.
A worker in the day, a publisher in the evening, a poet all the time, and a good friend. Steve Bloom, we're going to return to the interview. In the first half, to bring people up to date, Steve and I, who's a poet and a writer, we discussed the sea change in political consciousness exemplified by the Bernie Sanders campaign and the considerable depth of questioning of capitalism and searching for its replacement all over society, and it's sort of growing. Steve, let's follow up on that. How should people who see capitalism today as profoundly destructive of human life and the natural world, what's your sense of those of us who are still a relatively small minority but growing fast, and it seems as if we're entering a period of upheaval and tumult as capital really can't respond to its great challenges as it just keeps driving ahead to try and accumulate? Steve, what should we be doing?
Well, it seems to me that the first thing people have to do, and I find not everyone recognizes the kinds of changes that we've been talking about. So that's the first thing, is to get out of the old mindset where we were in small, isolated groups and not having much influence, and understand that we can get out there in the world and try to influence people. And then find ways to explain that just voting for Bernie Sanders or forming the Democratic Party or other incremental changes in establishment institutions aren't going to bring about even the kind of political revolution that Sanders is talking about, not to mention the more profound kind of social revolution we need, one that's going to sweep away this whole system based on supremacy and corporate greed. the key is learning to promote struggles for reform in ways that help to strengthen the independent mobilization of working people and oppressed communities, people acting for themselves. Our goal has to be to create a system which will actually be run democratically from below rather than by officials from the top. And before we can do that, people have to have experience running their own struggles and their own independent organizations. If we go to establishment state institutions, it has to be with clear demands for action that we have formulated ourselves based on our needs, not based on what's practical for those in power or compatible with the system of profit. And you see a lot of those kinds of practical proposals, for example, in the environmental movement, where people will focus on how to make renewable energy more profitable. And some of those are reasonable and good proposals, but making things profitable can't be our overall strategy if we agree that the primary enemy of the environment is the system of profit-making. And I would say not just enemy of the environment, but the enemy of humanity in so many ways. So it's a matter of creating our own institutions. The way Black Lives Matter, for example, created its own institutions, and labor unions can be a similar kind of thing when they aren't dominated by privileged conservative bureaucracies.
Yeah, let me challenge that a little bit. The radical left is fairly weak. We don't have sort of a mass base, but there's a tremendous left out there that is in tension between, it seems to me, very radical possibilities and these sort of practical things that you might win. Take like 350.org. It's a tremendous organization, at least in Portland, and the Sierra Club in Portland, and many other groups that find themselves fighting on sort of various fronts, but that in fact, if you go to their meetings and you read their materials and you read Bill Kibben's books and you go to their rallies, which I do, and work within them, what you find is that most of the people are very critical of the system as it exists now and realize that immense changes have to be made, and furthermore, that those changes have to be democratic. That is, they really move towards a vision of, let's say, energy democracy versus maintaining the system we have now. Energy democracy is a sort of buzzword that people really respond to. It seems to me that those movements of so many people in almost every area of life, the immigration rights movement, the anti-war movement, the continuation of civil rights and poverty movements, many different environmental movements, they all have that sort of mixed quality. We have to somehow get some legislation passed for which they often give away much too much, and we can be critical of that, and where the leadership of it then tells the members to, well, don't be too critical. That's what we have to do. But they're also just filled with critical ideas and real democratic aspirations. It seems to me that's an area that a left can work in and not just trying to pull people out and become revolutionary somehow in their sect, but where it can work on and build democratic values and ideas and help develop those aspirations and even model them themselves. Anyway, that's my long-winded question.
Well, that's a good question.
You have to...
I would set an example here in New York. There's been a struggle against fracking, big struggle against fracking in New York State, which actually won a concession from Governor Cuomo of New York, who banned fracking in New York. It's a big, big victory and a big development. Well, you can draw two conclusions from that. One is Governor Cuomo is now our ally, and isn't it wonderful? Which a whole wing of the environmental movement has kind of moved in that direction. But the right conclusion is Governor Cuomo only did that because he was afraid of what we would do if he didn't. And we have to keep up that pressure and keep up our own independent organization. The extent to which we make concessions on policy to get some little concessions somewhere else. To that extent, we weaken ourselves and we weaken our struggles. The anti-Vietnam War movement is kind of my favorite example of this because it won the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Vietnam by demanding the withdrawal of troops from Vietnam. And there were lots of people who wanted to demand negotiations and would have seen just some negotiated settlement. But the majority of the movement stood firm for troops out now. And we were able to achieve that. In part, obviously, the Vietnamese contributed greatly to that victory with their struggles. But the movement in the United States, and the Vietnamese will tell you, the movement in the United States demanding out now contributed significantly to their success. So it's true, we do have to win incremental changes, such as the ban on hydrofracking. It is a tremendous victory in New York. But we can't think that that's our ultimate goal.
Dave, we have to wrap
all right,
up.
Okay.
Thanks a lot for talking. You know, all things must end, but they can also then begin again sometime, and you're going to have to answer the question that I posed, actually, and I'm going to ask it in this way. Why are you doing your poetry, which is in some ways a sort of, you can see it as sort of inspiring people and public education. It's not, in fact, building groups or making demands. It's building consciousness, and I want to talk about building consciousness sometime with you. Thanks a lot for talking to us today, and your book is, give us the title, Steve.
It's The Time I Stopped to Watch.
And you wrote, you're really a good reader. It was a great poem. Thanks a lot, and we'll talk again.
Okay, thank you.